thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, here's one.
Here's John Williams.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard Jared Kushner's voice.
We've heard it once before, and I'm trying to remember why.
So I said
about something else.
I said to Kim during the news, as part of the sound was playing, I popped in her ear and I said, "Wait a minute! Wait a minute! Wait a minute! Was that Jared Kushner? I have not heard his voice before. It was. He spoke, and it wasn't so bad. I thought he'd have a voice like this, but he had a regular voice, a big boy voice." And he was able to speak fluidly and defend his position. They wisely released his position, all of, I think 11 pages of it, in advance. And now that story moves forward.
Would you like to hear it one more time?
Just kinda.
Sure?
Kinda.
Okay, here we go.
The record and documents I have voluntarily provided will show that all of my actions were proper and occurred in the normal course of events of a very unique campaign.
Whatever. I mean, yeah, I don't know. That's not Orion Samuelson, but few
no,
of us are.
But his voice goes with his body.
Right. It is know? A little thin and it is young.
Yes.
But so too is he.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
So,
okay.
It matches up. It's kind of like when you know, hear somebody's voice on the radio and then you see that person. This is kind of the flip side.
Why? Because it was what you expected. But in our case, so often they'll see us and go, oh, no.
Oh, really?
No, yeah. That's not what I thought. I thought you'd look
disappointing. Oh, always.
It's one of my favorite cartoons. I've mentioned this too many times, but one of my few and favorite cartoons about our industry is the mother consoling her son at the kitchen table, glass of milk, cookie on the table, and the mother's patting him on the back, and she says, "That's okay, honey. I remember how I felt when I saw my first talk show host." It's just the worst. It's just, I thought he'd be handsome or at least have hair, and we never do.
No. No hair.
All right, Kim. Thank
Even
you for the
me.
News.
No.
If you think Kim is a slender and attractive brunette, well, by golly, you will not be disappointed.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I was a buxom blonde.
Well, I love you, Kim, but I'm afraid you're not.
I'm not.
Here's a headline in the Chicago Tribune the other day. City reaches $38.75 million settlement in the red light ticket lawsuit. And I have to tell you, I've been here long enough to be cynical or skeptical about the process. I shouldn't be. I guess what it is bleed over. I'm so cynical and skeptical about the city and about the county and about the efficiencies. But this is sort of the flip side. If, in fact, they were screwing people left and right for years on those red light camera tickets, now there is a class action settlement, and over a million of you may be in it. And you're going to get, and this is, pardon me, but the hard part for me to believe, maybe 50% of what you paid in that red light ticket in 2014 or 2011. A check is going to come in the mail. It'll be made out to you, and you'll run to the mailbox. A mailbox is a square thing on a pole in front of a lawn. And you'll open up this envelope, and there will be money for you. And you'll take it to the bank, and then you'll go to the mall, in theory. Now, the attorney who's in front of this is a guy named Jackie Zolna. He's a lawyer with a firm called, I just said Jackie, pardon me, JC, with Myron M. Cherry and Associates. Welcome to the show. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Are congratulations in advance warranted here?
Thank you for that. But yes, it still does need to be approved by the city council this week.
So what happened? Take me just back to the infractions themselves. What was going on there?
Well, the law required the city to issue a certain number of notices to individuals who are accused of the camera violations, as well as give them a certain amount of time to either pay or contest or otherwise deal with these tickets. And what was happening was the city was not following their own rules. They were not sending the right notices. They were speeding up the time that people had to do something with these tickets. And then on the back end, once they were found liable, they actually sped up the time through which they could double the ticket.
Okay, but then it sounds administrative. That is, everybody's familiar with the frustration we had. Maybe the time that the light was yellow wasn't sufficiently long, and people felt like they were wrongly being given tickets, or there was no way they could avoid getting the ticket. This isn't about that, is it?
Correct. There's obviously a lot of different controversies surrounding this program. Our suit covers what you, I guess you could call a discrete series of practices that we uncovered, and those are going to be the people who are affected, and those are the people who are in our case.
And then to say nothing of the scandal of who the contractors were and how they got the contract, which is another sort of unfortunate angle to the story. But if it had been done legitimately and people were deserving of those tickets and they needed to pay the tickets, your suit is still germane, isn't it? Because you're not talking about whether or not people were getting screwed or the city had a bogus deal with the vendor. You're just talking about how they were handling these arrangements, right?
Correct. I mean, it really boils down to, you know, the city's holding us to the letter of the law, so much so that they're putting a camera on every corner to watch our backs to make sure we're following it. We here kind of turned the camera on them and made sure that they were following the law as well, which they weren't in this circumstance.
But pardon me, isn't that just a little ironic? I mean, so every facet of this thing stunk, didn't it? People shouldn't have been getting the tickets. The contractor shouldn't have had the contract with the city. And then even when they did execute it, then they screwed that up as well. I mean, nothing about this was right.
I don't know why you sound so surprised, John.
I do. I think we. I get your point, and touche. But seriously, the city's not in the business to screw or frustrate people. It just seems that way. It shouldn't be that way. And this is maybe as good an example as we'll ever have. This is fantastic.
I agree, and really in litigating this case, you know, I think we wanted to make a point to the city that you can't do this. And if you're going to run these camera programs, you have to follow the law as well. So I think we accomplished that in ultimately getting a chunk of money this big.
So how did you get the class then? I mean, there have been individual cases. You're representing over 1 million people yourself. Am I right?
Correct.
1 million people or 1 million tickets?
It's about 1.2 million people.
How many tickets does that represent?
Roughly 1.5 million.
Okay. So some people got dinged a couple of times.
Correct.
And the idea is then if you're part of the class, I'll be notified by mail?
Correct. Right now,
email or snail mail?
It will be snail mail.
Okay, so that's fine. Don't you know? Start going through your envelopes, kids. Don't throw that stuff away.
Right. If the city has, obviously they're able to find people to send these tickets to collect the money. We're going to make sure that obviously they'll be able to find these people to send them the money back.
Well, did these 1.2 million people in fact pay on these tickets? That's what we're talking about. Some people didn't.
Some people did. Some people didn't.
If you did, you're part of the class. If you didn't, you're not part of the class.
If you didn't, you can get up to half of your amounts owed wiped out.
Okay, I got to think about that for a second. If you didn't pay, half that you'll owe will be wiped out.
Correct.
Oh, that's right, because that's the equivalent then of the people who paid in full and are getting half off. Everybody's out 50%.
Correct.
Or getting back 50% if the glass is half full.
Exactly.
Okay, so do these people, you told me off the air last week that these people had previously been notified of their eligibility, their participation in the class already, right?
Not necessarily. What happened was, the city, after we obtained a few victories in court, they actually passed a new law about a year ago that tried to reauthorize the relitigation of these tickets. So they sent out a new notice. You may be familiar with those blue review notices that went out over the holiday period.
Yeah.
Those were the tickets that were part of our suit. The only people who got those blue review notices were the people who were part of our lawsuit. So the easiest way to determine whether you're in or you're out is if you got that blue review notice, the tickets that are listed on that, those are the tickets that are subject to our suit.
Fair enough.
Otherwise, class members and people out there who are affected can just hold tight for right now. Something will be coming out. If you are part of this case, you don't need to do anything right now.
You will get something in the mail.
You will get something
in the mail. A lot of us have had those class action settlements. If you have purchased a banana sometime between 1972 and 1978, you're due for a 1 cent refund from Chiquita, right? You get those.
Correct.
Something like this?
It's going to be a little more than a cent, though, for a lot of people.
What is it going to amount to?
Well, an average ticket is $100. Most of these tickets will have been doubled. So a good chunk of the tickets will be $200 each.
Because they weren't paid in time?
Because they weren't paid in time. That's kind of the back end of our case as well. They sped up that amount of time where they could double the ticket. So if someone's out there and they have $200 owed, they paid $200 for a ticket, they're in line to get up to $100 back.
Really? If they paid otherwise they get $100 off.
Correct.
the total bill. And then what about court? Are there other court costs, other expenses associated with this process?
There's obviously costs associated with administering something like this.
But I'm talking about as an individual ticket rider, like $100, maybe $200. Is it actually $278 because you're also dinged for court costs or something like that?
That's correct. It's all amounts paid on a ticket or all amounts owed on a ticket. So you're right. There are sometimes you see the collection costs tacked onto these things. That falls within our settlement as well.
Hmm. When are people going to get the money?
It's going to take a while, several months. My best guess, if everything runs smoothly, it could be mid-2018.
Why?
Well, first of all, the settlement hasn't even been approved yet by the city council. Yeah. So the administration of this whole process has not even started yet.
You did say mid-2018, right?
Correct.
Okay,
keep going. So what happens is there has to be a period of time to send this notice out to the class and allow them the opportunity, you know, to submit their claim and things like that. It's a process. We have to go to the court. The court oversees all this. So it's not something that can be done in a week, and it never can in a case like this, in a case this size.
Should there be something a little more punitive about the settlement? I mean, if this is all of the people getting half of the money, maybe it should even be a larger amount to sort of, I don't know if any of us benefits from any of our governmental bodies losing more money, but usually you ding them even more and then they're more motivated to do right next time. Is anything like that happening here?
Well, I think what was close to $40 million settlement is a pretty significant sum of money for the city. I think we've, you know, made a point to the city that, you know, you need to follow the law.
Does this get their attention? $38 million? I mean, it's a big city.
You'd be surprised. Well, you shouldn't be surprised. It was extremely hard to negotiate an
give
amount.
Give $38 million
to get this
of
amount.
Was that a negotiated amount? Were you back and forth with them across the conference table
for a long period of time? Yes.
No kidding. Long period of time, meaning one day, 7 hours, or 22 days.
It's maybe on and off over the past year.
How hard is that? I mean, and then at the end of the day, you come up with 50%, which seems to be reasonable, maybe even fortunate for the city. Hell, if they got 38, they got 76. Why not give 100% back? These people got screwed.
Well, that's the settlement, right? I mean, they are on the one hand, you have a lawsuit like ours, which we were doing very well in, and we think we would have prevailed. But on the other hand, you have, you know, the city being undefeated in these cases, the law favors them in these
types of
cases.
No
so
kidding.
They're very difficult cases. I think ours is a little bit different than the rest of them, but there's you know, all that goes into the calculus of determining whether the risk versus the reward in any kind of settlement.
But you said undefeated, but in individual cases prior to this, in fact, the judges have been throwing these out, right?
They, you know, individual suits were, or individual, it's not even suits, it's the administrative hearing where someone may have gotten a ticket when they weren't supposed to. Yeah, obviously, people have prevailed in those in the past, but in a class action which challenges
right.
a practice or the camera program as a whole, those cases have never won.
Then why did the city settle? Why did the
city? Because in this case, ours is a little bit different. We got past what, you know, usually the judge throws these cases out in the beginning. Our case got past that step. That was a huge step in our case because it was the first time where a judge said, this case, the judge did not rule that we were won or lost.
She thinks it has merit.
She did say it could potentially have merit. I'm going to allow it to go forward. So,
and you said yeehaw.
Something similar to that, yes, yeah. when that happened.
And the city said, oh, crap, now what do we do?
Correct.
So they settle. Okay, it's 121. Somebody wanted to know if this is just Chicago City. Is it Cook County? Is it Chicagoland area? Where are these cameras? Does that define the class in some way? Let's answer that, maybe your question, too. My number is 312-981-7200. On Sunday, somebody texted us, Saturday, on my show, and they said, what if I was driving a truck for my employer and it gets the ticket, and my employer hits me with the ticket? Who gets the check? How do I know? Those, and maybe your question too, 312-981-7200. We're talking about the red light ticket program and this pending settlement. So, you know, we had these red light cameras. We did. A lot of things were wrong about them. And among them, if nothing else, the administration of those tickets. People weren't given enough time to respond. There was a class action suit. It looks like that class action suit is being reviewed favorably by the courts because while it's not been settled completely, Actually, has it been settled? Like what? So how do I describe the status then of the class?
We've reached a deal with the city's law department, and it's pending approval of the city council.
So in our studio is J.C. Zolna. He is a lawyer with Myron M. Cherry and Associates. They are representing that class of over a million people, all to get 50% off sometime next year. Be nice if they got it. Oh, I don't know. I was thinking it'd be nice if they got their money before Christmas this year. It'd be nice if they got it before Christmas of 2018. You think middle of next year they'll get the money.
Correct.
Yeah. Some of our texters are asking, why only half? I think you addressed that. I mean, that's just the best deal you felt like you could. What was your last offer? Like 60%? And then they said, no, 40%?
No. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of back and forth. It's a settlement, right? So everyone has to compromise a little bit. And in the past, in the dozen or so other class action lawsuits that have been brought against the city for these things, the city's paid zero. So, you know, in this case, is the first time they've come up with some money. They've come up with quite a bit of money, you know, and it's a very good amount. And that's the deal we made. And it was a hard-fought deal. And, you know, we're happy with it.
John, we got tickets. What if we've moved?
As long as you are... your address is up to date with your vehicle, with the Secretary of State, that's where we're going to get the information to send the notice. So
what if I sold the vehicle?
Well, then if you moved, hopefully if you move, you do a forwarding address with the post office, in which case we would send the mailing would go to your last known address with the Secretary of State, which if you've forwarded your address, the post office will send along to your current address.
John, what if it works if I drive for a fleet and I'm responsible for my own actions? I got the ticket on the company truck. The license plate then is the company's, not mine, but I'm due the refund.
If there's employees out there who have, you know, the employer requires them to pay these tickets, they're going to need to talk to their employer because they're the registered owner of the vehicle. They're the ones who technically were liable. They may not have ultimately paid, but there's no way for us, even the city or anyone else, to know who ultimately paid that ticket. So if you had to reimburse your employer for that, that's an issue you're going to need to talk to your employer about.
One last thing, JC. So you said, you know, watch your mailbox. There's no website I can log into, type in my name or license plate?
There will be soon. Again, like I said, we're still pending. This settlement is still pending approval with the city council. So the administration of it has not yet kickstarted. But soon, hopefully in a matter of weeks, there will be a website with all the information about the website and, you know, how to proceed.
Okay. Nice job. I think, you know, I mean, here again, this thing is screwed up. I'm not a fan of seeing the city fork over $34 million when I have to pay extra for soda. I know those are different, you know, municipality, one's county, one's city, but it just seems to me like we need the city, county, and state to be smart with their money, smart with their administrative practices, and not waste it. Not have to send out $34 million. That money's got to come from somewhere, and ultimately it comes from the taxpayers of the city.
Well, the good news for taxpayers, at least some partial good news, is that a big portion of the settlement is going to be funded through the settlement with Redflex, the vendor that was you know, at the center of all the bribery scandal and all that. So a big chunk of this is going to be funded through that.
That is very good news. I'm glad you mentioned that. Thanks for coming in, and let's stay in touch, keep our listeners informed.
I will. Thank you.
Ready to throw down a little handyman poker?
Yeah, you know, I've been sure.
Hold on a second now.
Okay.
Just get your notes ready. I'll get my notes ready. Handyman poker is the game you play at home, and you don't even realize it. You go to work, you go to school, you go to wherever it is that you go on Monday, and you turn to somebody, and you go, yeah, well, this weekend we relined the seal on the Fratastat. And then the other guy goes, oh, yeah, really? Because I just rejoined the whatchamajig. And so you're playing a little one-upsmanship. It's called handyman poker. The question is, who's got the better hand? And Steve and I will trade notes. And you'll be the judge at home in just a minute. Before we do any of that, though, and boy, that does sound like fun, John. Let's talk to Rob. We're talking about that red light camera scandal. Everything about that thing stunk. Hey, Rob, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Well, first of all, thank you, WGN. You are the best radio station in the United States. In case anyone doesn't know that by now, now you know. But I contest for 10 of my tickets. Each one of them, I was in the right. They were in the wrong. I still had to pay. But what I'd like to do for the legal team, I'd like to do Grant Park, couple hundred thousand people. You guys get up on the stage, and we do a huge group hug to give you thanks.
You want to do like a Blackhawks parade, millions of people,
exactly.
The Cubs parade,
absolutely.
Millions of people holding their vouchers in the air, their ticket stubs, whatever.
And thank you. Thank you. You guys are angels.
And the legal team is on, you know, those open air trolleys, and we're waving to them and screaming confetti, everything, huh?
Absolutely. We'll throw roses up there. We'll pass them cases of beer, you know, anything.
Grown men crying, children weeping. It's just a wonderful thing. Wow.
Thank you so much, guys. You know, from me, I love you.
Thanks for the call, my friend. It's nice of you to say all those things, and I hope you get some of your money back.
Well, we'll see, but thanks again. I'm sure I will, but, you know, 50% is better than zero.
All right, Rob, stay well. Thanks for the call. You betcha. It's nice of you to say. How about that, Steve? A ticker tape parade for the legal team. It'd be the first time in history.
I love it.
Lawyers, you know, on open bed trucks and people waving, and they're throwing out maybe Tootsie Pops or something like that to the crowd.
And during the parade, they'd wait until each light turned kind of a steel yellow, and then they'd go through
and
it.
Then they'd gun it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It would put the Cubs parade to shame. Be the largest gathering in human history. The Cubs parade was sort of at first advertised as the largest gathering in human history. Then it sort of worked its way down. But I believe the records keepers have it in the top 10. Do you recall that?
I remember now that you say that, they said it was the largest gathering in
human history. I mean, no, that sounds dramatic. But if you think about it, when do you get a large gathering of humans?
And think of it, we were in that. I mean, we're alongside it.
It was so awesome. Well, yeah, we were on the roof or on the street. That was one of my favorite all-time broadcasts, I must say. And it's funny because at the time I was working at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, and weekends here, I came down for a couple of things. They said, hey, the parade's today. I kind of knew that, but they said, do you want to join Bill and Wendy and Judy up on the roof? You were on the air too. And I got to be part of that broadcast team just briefly, but I can now say I was part of the broadcasters of that. And that's all I can do. You know, I can't play third. I can do that. That was so much fun. So then you say, okay, when do you get that many millions of people all in one place? Indy 500 is...
Well, what about some of the Hajj or
the pilgrimages, right? And things like that, right? But it would be all in one place at one time for a specific reason. I mean, New York City's 8 million people, 12 million people every day. But this would be... So I don't know how you quote-unquote define a crowd. But I guess what they're saying is that then the Cubs parade crowd was bigger than the Indy 500. I guess the Indy 500 is about 250,000, now that I think about it.
Ah, nothing.
I know. So that was kind of fun. And then they started to scratch their heads and go, yeah, well, what about this and so forth. But I think we're still... Hey, Elif, look up that up. Cubs crowd, parade crowd.
He's giving you the Google keywords now.
I know. Don't you hate it when people do that? God, I do that. no, I was actually thinking of... Sean Spicer's free. Have him see if...
I was going to say, it's like an inauguration crowd.
See if we can't get Spicer on this to confirm for us what the crowd size was.
You miss him yet?
Wonder what he's doing today. What do you suppose Sean Spicer is doing today, Monday? He had the weekend free. Instead of today putting on an ill-fitting suit, he didn't have to.
They said he's still working.
I don't know
what that really means.
Yeah.
He could be at home finishing up the voodoo dolls.
talk to me on the radio for a second here, Elif. Elif is saying that the crowd size was 5 million for the Cubs parade.
Yes.
That makes sense, too, yeah. Was it 5? They're saying 5.
They said the city reported approximately 5 million people turned out.
Okay, so then... In human history, which gatherings have been larger? That'll be your second search.
All right.
All right, she said, as though that would be a fun thing to do.
She wakes up every morning thinking, what could it be today?
All right, you ready to play?
Sure.
This is Handyman Poker. It goes like this.
Handyman. Does what Lou Manfredini can.
That's me.
Fixes tubes in a flash. Guess who just saved some cash? Hey there, here goes the handyman.
That's all of us on a weekend. We do the things on our own, save some cash, feel good about it. You're your own version of Lou Manfredini. And then you announce to your wife, your children, even Daisy, your dizzy dapple dachshund.
Hey there, here comes the handyman.
Yep, yeah, this is what I did. All right, you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You can go first.
Okay. I hung a lot of pictures.
Wow.
Clocks, glass plates on the wall this weekend. And one in particular, this is what I'll tell the grandkids. It was a hook that goes in the bathroom. And the two screws that anchor the hook weren't side by side. They were one on top of the other. Meaning that if you get the top or bottom one just a little off center, then the hook will be quite noticeably crooked. Nailed it. Four of them. Okay, what you got? And by the way, I cannot stress how difficult that task was.
Yeah.
How the slightest error.
I hung a bunch of pictures at my mother-in-law's condo.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, and it didn't even occur to me to enter that.
I'm waiting, Steve.
Okay, I have to give me a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I went up. We have part of our house is flat. We have a flat roof.
Yeah.
And where the rubber roof meets the seams sometimes, you know, it tears away from the end. So I was up with a roofing caulk up on my roof.
Yeah.
And sealing all the seams.
Caulking the seams along your roof.
Yeah. There was a wind advisory, but I felt safe.
So really, you just had a squirt gun and you were putting some goo in between some obvious lines on your roof.
I was up a couple of stories.
Yeah.
And I had to climb not one ladder, but two ladders to get up there.
Did you really have to do that?
Well, yeah. It's up high.
Wow.
Have you ever been to my house?
Yeah, I don't remember the height of
your
roof.
No, I know, but I don't know if you'd ever been to my house.
No, you've invited me once, okay, thank you, and yeah. I was there, and yeah. Okay, well, I guess the question now is, who is the handier man this weekend? You can text to 312-981-7200. We'll see what the total votes are at 2 o'clock.
Let me say, you decide when we play. So it's sort of like playing poker. You decide when to call.
I get three aces and say, hey, do you want to play poker?
It's I can't believe you called this week.
I'll deal you in.
You hung a picture, man.
Didn't just hang a picture. I hung a bunch of pictures. And bathroom hooks for which the margin of error was maybe a 16th of an inch, and then the whole thing could go awry. And then you would have had crooked. In fact, on one of them, truth be told, I stood back and I looked at it and I went, okay, that doesn't look straight up and down.
Right, right.
So I called Brenda in for the review, because that's what you do. You do the thing, then you bring your wife in and you explain to her why it's not perfect. And I said, God is my witness. Brenda, I believe this is an optical illusion that the way the hook is curved, it makes it look off center, but in fact, it is perpendicular to the floor. And her exact words were, uh-huh. And that's the way that went.
I'm sorry, I wasn't there for that.
This has just been handed to me. The Cubs parade was the seventh largest gathering in human history. Here's the top 10. Thank you, Elif. Number 10, the Hajj pilgrimage. You mentioned that in Mecca, Saudi Arabia, 2012, 3 million. Oh, no. Number 9.
Don't say it.
Is a Rod Stewart concert in 1994. That was the ninth largest gathering in human history, a Rod Stewart concert.
He promised it would be his last.
The funeral of Gamal Abdel Nasser in Cairo, Egypt in 1970 drew 5 million. The Cubs World Series parade in Chicago in 2016, 5 million. The Youth Day in Manila, also 5 million. Pope Francis in Manila, 6 million. It's okay to be beat by a pope. It's not okay to be beat by Rod Stewart. The funeral of Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran drew 10 million. I wonder how many of those people did so voluntarily, but still, 10 million. Number 3, the funeral of somebody whose name I can't pronounce, C.N. Anadurai in India in 1969, 15 million. A festival in Iraq drew 17 million in 2014, and the number one largest gathering of humans in history was the Kumbh Mela pilgrimage in India in 2013, 30 million people. Still, we're in the top 10, which is nice.
Right, but all of those have happened within the past, not all of them, but The majority of them in the past 10 years.
2016, 2012.
Well, 5 years.
Yeah.
Think of that.
So, well, there's more people on Earth. Maybe easier for folks to gather these days. But
got a lot more electronic counters. It's easier to add them up.
How about them Cubs?
Okay.
I went and saw Dunkirk. I saw Dunkirk over the weekend. You haven't seen that yet, have
no,
you?
No, we were going to, and Sharon said, what's John's review of it? And I said, well, I'll wait.
I am the master of reviewing movies I have not seen. John, how can you tell if it will be a good film? Many ways. One is by the trailers. I think we shall know them by their trailer. And then, you know, what is Dean or Nick?
That's not. You're not reviewing it if you're listening to, if you're adapting other people's reviews who've seen it.
Or Michael Phillips. What do people who you know and respect say? And I'm able to sort of make a conglomeration of these things and then form an informed opinion about it. In fact, I will be doing these kinds of reviews on Fox News soon. So I feel like I've got it. And my review was really good for Dunkirk prior to having seen it Saturday night. To confirm that it was a swell film, we went with the Petersons and saw it Saturday night. My final verdict is next. Steve Bertrand and I are playing Handyman Poker. I know you play it too. It's what you do on Monday after you did some chores around the house on the weekend. And you say, well, he changed the seal on the downstairs toilet. What did you do? I hung a bunch of pictures and hooks that were perilously dangerous. Anything could have gone wrong, including getting them awry. But they're all pretty perpendicular to the floor. Pretty dang proud of that.
Anytime the danger can be described with the word awry, it's not that dangerous. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Steve climbed a couple of ladders. I want to see the pictures of these. They may have been step stools. Anyway, he was on his roof, and he recaulked a seal that was broken on his roof.
Recaulked the roof line.
That makes it more impressive?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what we've got.
I protected my family from a deluge. You kept your
towels dry.
Finger towels dry.
You know how mold grows, Steve? Moisture on pliable surfaces. So far, Elif tells us, how's the voting going on this?
Well, Steve is in the lead right now with 8-1.
8-1 is the margin?
That's closer than I thought.
Oh, come on. Text to 312-981-7200 because you have tried to do what I described and you have gotten it wrong. And then if you're lining two or three things up on the wall by the kitchen, you got the clock, you got the frame picture, you've got the plate art. And if one of those is a little off center, well, now you got to rehammer something and then fix the hole. There's no margin for error. Text to 312-981-7200. Who's winning Handyman Poker as we now go to our much-awaited review of Dunkirk?
Where are we going? Dunkirk. I'm not going back. There's no hiding from this, son. We have a job to do.
There are 400,000 men on this beach.
True story, of course. 380, maybe 400,000 men trapped on a beach in Dunkirk. The Nazis waiting to pounce on them. Hitler decided not to. An armada of 700 civilian craft rescued them, and the men were all saved to fight another day. It's a great story in Britain, and World War II historians know it. It's been made into a movie before, but not like this. Wow, is this movie loud and overwhelming. Michael Phillips described it as a sort of waterboarding on film. And I'm with Michael Phillips on this. He gave it 3 stars, but he didn't seem to be happy about it. I didn't think this movie was anywhere nearly as good as the reviews. We saw it at the Music Box, and afterwards people applauded, so I suspect I'm in the minority, but my group of four, none of us were really that happy with it.
Well, because it was just kind of brutal to watch?
It was not gory. Frankly, it was so not gory. I mean, I'll bet some historians will take exception with that. But it's the story from air, land, and sea about how, you know, so three storylines about how these people were rescued. It was so loud. It was hard to understand the dialogue. Somebody emailed me before the show or texted me, and they said, hey, by the way, my wife just texted me. She says, I'm voting for Steve on Handyman Poker.
I was about to say she can't vote, but then I knew I'd get her vote.
Thanks a lot, Brenda. Steve, thanks you too.
Yes, I do.
Hey, Brenda, call Steve next time you need the bathroom hooks rehung. So,
like you two would ever move again.
Not only are we retiring in that house, we're going to be buried in this condo. Anyway, Steve, I did not understand a word of dialogue, and it wasn't the accents. It was just hard to understand with all of the noise of this movie where people are talking. You really don't need much dialogue, but I mean, I couldn't understand much of what they were saying.
Well, that's discouraging.
They also don't do much for the narrative at all. I mean, it'd be nice if they gave us some backdrop, like why were these guys trapped on the beach to begin with? How did the word get out to rescue them? I know we could all go read books or go online and figure this out, but I was surprised at how thin the story was.
Now, you saw this Saturday night?
Yeah.
Because I think I was listening to you Saturday morning, right? And you said you were going to read up on it.
Yeah, I was. Well, I read a little bit, but I mean...
No, but I mean, even knowing you had to read up on it, you still couldn't follow it.
Well, I thought I had read sufficiently.
I'm not blaming you. I'm saying that's how difficult it must have been.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, if you knew going in that you're going to have to work to follow the storyline, you did some homework, and you still weren't able to follow it, that means that it probably was very, very difficult.
Right. If you just want to see planes going, and guys in boats going, look out! This is the movie for you. But if you want to know why any of that is happening, you better hit the interwebs first, because this movie is not interested in telling you what the hell is going on. It's very disappointing. Linda, this is John. You're on WGN. Did you see the movie?
We did. We saw it this weekend, and my husband was ready to get up and walk out. He thought there was no story to it, no dialogue, like you said. He also felt that it was really hard to understand the English accents.
Yeah.
And he said he missed so much of it, and it was like, as you said, a bunch of water, a bunch of guys drowning, and a bunch of airplanes just fighting with each other.
Yeah, and maybe that was true to what happened, but Lord, we don't know what's going on.
Right, and we paid money to go see that.
Well, yeah, we did.
You know, so I called my sister. She said she was getting ready to see it. I said, don't bother.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Linda, I appreciate your listening. And finally, just a couple quick calls here. We got to get to the news. Debbie, your quick review is what?
We were very disappointed in it. It did not flow easily. We were kind of lost from the outset. It looked like the planes were flying all day, but then there were night scenes where
the
ships were bumped.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know the story is, you know, all these civilians came, but the boats that we saw were maybe two dozen.
That was the other thing. Where is the sweeping epic shot of this armada of ships? Nothing. Boy, thank you for the call. Hey, John, I'm with you. Three of us did not like it either. Couldn't follow it at all. I even read a bit about Dunkirk. Had a hard time with it. This week's edition of Handyman Poker now closes. Here's the final vote total. Who had the handier weekend? Was it John Williams or Steve Bertrand? Producer Elif.
Steve, 27. You, John, 5.
I'm sorry, Elif. I was busy there. What were the numbers again?
You know, I'm not going to go with that joke.
No. So I'm trying to remember, did I get five times as many? Because five times five would be 25.
You know, I want...
I got 27.
This Honesty and Integrity Commission that the president has looking into the last election, I want them to review this thing.
So, Elif, you'd say I got more than five times as many votes.
Were there any voting irregularities in the total that you can tell of, Elif?
There were five.
Well...
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
207, this is John. I'm here. I'm just still reeling from the vote totals of the last hour.
Lord have mercy.
We played Handyman Poker. Steve Bertrand won. The margin was significant. It's now, upon further review, been revealed that three of the votes came from members of my family, and the two of them...
and I'd like to thank them.
...were for you. One of them was for me. And that one was, in fact, from me, so I didn't get a lot of love from the home team. And we'll move on. So I'm really at a loss to tell you all of the details, what exactly is going on with this New York Times, Fox and Friends story. But I think as good a summary as you'll hear is from Fox and Friends themselves. This is from Saturday's Fox and Friends TV show. I didn't know that they did it on Saturdays as well. And I'm not a regular viewer of the program, but we all certainly know about it. It's the president's favorite show, so it gets a lot of mention. In fact, from the Fox and Friends show or the Fox News website, the president often tweets things. And over the weekend, he tweeted something about how the New York Times sort of led to the failure of a military effort to get the leader of ISIS because they leaked information. The New York Times leaked information in a story about the whereabouts of this bad guy. And as a result, that bad guy was able to get away. Now, that's the story from the Fox News site. The president then tweets about that. And then Fox and Friends talked about that.
The president up early this morning tweeting about some things. One of the things that he was tweeting about is the New York Times and how this ISIS leader, al-Baghdadi, was able to sneak away in the cover of darkness after a New York Times story went to press in 2015. Here is the tweet that the president sent out. The failing New York Times foiled U.S. attempt to kill the single most wanted terrorist, al-Baghdadi, their sick agenda over national security.
That's right. So what you're going to hear now is sound from General Tony Thomas. He's the leader of Special Operations Command. So they're in charge of all the dirty and dark stuff that happens at night to kill bad guys that most of us don't know anything about. And he's sitting admitting that we would have had al-Baghdadi based on the intelligence we had, except someone leaked information to the failing New York Times in 2015. This is the previous administration. And as a result, we think he slipped away. Take a listen.
It was a very good lead. Unfortunately, it was leaked in a prominent national newspaper about a week later, and that lead went dead. So that's the challenge we have in terms of where and how our tactics and procedures are discussed openly. There's a great need to inform the American public about what we're up to. There's also a great need to recognize things that will absolutely undercut our ability to do our job.
So he's walking a delicate balance there, saying there's a need to report. But is the need to report this? They had Abu Sayyaf. They killed Abu Sayyaf from ISIS. They grab his wife. His wife then gives up a ton of information. How he traveled, with whom he traveled, how he liked to move around, and they were closing in on him.
And then, Clayton, when that goes on the internet, as the failing New York Times does, that can be read there and elsewhere. And so he understands what they know, goes underground, goes somewhere else, changes his plans. That's one of the other reasons it's the failing New York Times. It's not just failing in its credibility. It's failing our country.
Well, it's failing the American people. Because you think about what the role is of media today. Is it to inform and to protect the American people? Because if that is the case, you think about something like that and the harm that it does to our national security. So this happened if you are Republican or Democrat.
You want a patriotic journalist.
Why do I get the feeling that there was a memo at Fox News that said use the word failing a lot?
That's what struck me the most there. Who are these people?
Well, they're patriotic. By the way, I don't know what the takeaway from this is. There are many, but I am actually not sure, and I'm not just being the devil's advocate here, but I'm actually not sure that the first priority of a journalist is to be patriotic. Fox News, they think it is. If that's your team, then watch them all you want. But I'm also more interested in the veracity of what they're talking about. And here's what I also know, Steve, that in the case of this Abu Sayyaf, not only did Fox News report that story shortly after it happened in 2015, it wasn't just the New York Times that reported it. Fox News did as well. But all of them got information from the Department of Defense, which itself in a press release the next day said, we went after this guy, his wife, we were able to capture information, and that'll help us down the road.
They said they got it from the Secretary of Defense, right? Wasn't
yeah.
it Ash Carter?
In fact, it was Ash Carter. In fact, the New York Times reminds us that it was Ash Carter who put out the press release. So if General Tony Thomas at an event the other day said, boy, that sure hurt our chances, that may be his opinion. But it would behoove Fox News to, I don't know, do some original reporting or respond to the New York Times or tell the New York Times, hey, this guy said that you guys were responsible for leaking the information and the bad guy got away. What about that? And then they could have reminded him, well, it was in the press release. Actually, the Department of Defense said, and by the way, the New York Times, before they ran that story, told the Department of Defense, here's what we're going to say. And the Department of Defense signed off on it. They said, okay. So either Tony Thomas has a bad memory or he just differs in his assessment of whether or not that information should have been released. But it doesn't make the New York Times either singular or as culpable as they make it sound. And boy, you do see the disinformation loop, don't you? Fox News puts it out. and it's inaccurate or misleading, the president reads it and then tweets it. Fox News then on TV now says the president is saying this. And then it starts to take on the appearance of officialness, right? Or truth. Well, the president said that today. Why did the president say it? Because Fox said it. It's this loop, and it's not true, but the loop keeps spinning, and they each feed off of each other. It's 2:13 on WGN. I reached out today to Jane Kirtley, a professor of media ethics at the University of Minnesota. She's joined us on these sorts of quandaries before, and we asked her to comment again. Jane, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
You sound forlorn, Jane.
Well, I'm so exhausted. You know, Fox and Friends and Fox News keep claiming that they're two distinct entities. But when Fox and Friends plays off of Fox News and Fox News takes the story and continues to run with it, I can't see a distinction. I think the theory that was voiced a few minutes ago that it's very possible that General Thomas didn't necessarily agree with what others thought was an appropriate public relations exercise is probably what happened. I don't think he was trying to lie or mislead. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because I've dealt with enough military people over the years to know that they don't always agree, although they obviously officially do. But the fact that Fox would make no attempt to contact the New York Times, and the New York Times is the one that has had to have this extensive deconstruction of everything that happened, and Fox's response, which they're characterizing as an apology, is basically to repeat what they already said and said, and by the way, the New York Times disagrees with us. That's real effective. I'm at a loss. I don't like the idea of news organizations threatening other news organizations. I've seen some comments online where people have said the New York Times should sue them. I disagree with that because I think you take a huge risk of making very bad law if you sue a news organization. So I don't think the New York Times would be advised to do that, and I doubt that they will. But this is very disturbing when Fox and Friends, I mean, talk about patriotism. Their version of patriotism seems to be the mouthpiece of the Trump administration and who cares about truth or accuracy. So that's, to me, that's totally unpatriotic.
Those are two high callings, patriotism and truth. And you'd like to think that one doesn't get in the way of the other. Now, I'm not saying they should have carte blanche and say anything that might put somebody in jeopardy. That would be stupid. But I think doing a vigorous job in holding this administration's feet to the fire cannot be construed as unpatriotic. I see how tempting it is.
It's the most patriotic thing a news organization can do. That's what our Constitution guarantees, that the media will hold government to account, not simply be their mouthpiece or yes men.
Okay, what about this? Jane, I just want to play, and maybe it stood out to you too, something that they were doing in that report.
Except someone leaked information to the failing New York Times. And then, Clayton, when that goes on the internet, as the failing New York Times does, that's one of the other reasons it's the failing New York Times. It's not just failing in its credibility. It's failing our country.
Well, it's failing the American people. Because you think about what the role is of media today. Is it to inform and to protect the American people?
You want a patriotic journalist.
So the president has coined that phrase, but what do you make of their use of it?
It makes my skin crawl, and it does because it is, you know, here's the thing. For better or for worse, we in the news media are kind of all in this together in the sense that if the First Amendment protects the New York Times, it also protects Fox News. And I accept that and I celebrate that. But this kind of gratuitous name-calling where you're simply picking up a phrase that the administration has been using in a way that I consider very threatening. I mean, it's right up there with enemy of the people as far as I'm concerned. It's appalling to me. And I'm trying not to be too, passionate about it because I understand Fox and Friends, they would say they're not really a news show, that they really are an entertainment show, that they would probably say in some ways they should not be taken any more literally than you would take The Daily Show or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, to their world, they are seen as a news site, and clearly the president regards them as one. So it would be nice if they kind of pulled up their socks and acted like one.
I never thought of distinguishing Fox News from Fox and Friends. When I watch the Today Show or the CBS Morning News, I expect them to be as accurate as they can be. And I also expect the same from NBC News and CBS News, for instance, right?
But I think the closer parallel, and I'm not saying it's an exact parallel, would probably be between like the CBS Evening News and Face the Nation. You know, it's a distinction between news and commentary. And okay. Again, not suggesting it's an exact comparison, but I think there is a distinction because on those shows, you know, Sunday morning shows, we sort of expect people to come on and express their viewpoints. We'd like them to be accurate and fact-based. They are not always that. They're not always that way.
The president is, if nothing else, been able to accomplish this in his first 6 months in office. Hand out nicknames, very mean-spirited, belittling nicknames. He, of course, got elected in part because of his strength of making fun of his opponents. But he's continues to call Hillary Clinton Crooked Hillary. He now calls Adam Schiff Sleazy Adam Schiff. He calls Jeff Sessions in a tweet today beleaguered Adam Jeff Sessions, and I don't know what he's doing there. Do you know what the import of that is, by any chance?
Well, if Jeff Sessions is beleaguered, I think it's by President Trump, who basically was denouncing him last week in an interview with the New York Times.
Yeah.
I mean, the name calling is childish, but it obviously resonates with a segment of his supporters. I can't defend it, and I'm not going to, and I'm upset when media organizations that purport to be concerned about accuracy and balance engage in that kind of activity.
He calls the Washington Post now Amazon Washington Post. What do you suppose the idea there is?
Well, of course, the reference is to Jeff Bezos, who bought the Washington Post and is also the brains and money behind Amazon.com.
Yeah, but I get that. But I mean, so what? How does that help or the president or hurt Washington Post?
Well, I think the president has for a long time suggested that the interests of Washington Post and Amazon are basically one and the same. And he's made allegations along the way about everything from internet taxes to I don't know what all, and basically suggested that the Washington Post is simply a front for Jeff Bezos.
I do not see the value to the president who's trying to help business. If he's labeled and wants you to disbelieve Washington Post, they are the enemy of the people. The Washington Post is the enemy of the people, the president has told us. Then why does he want to bring down Amazon, one of our biggest companies, with it? What's the value of that to workers at Amazon?
But you're asking for consistent policy here, and I don't think I've seen any evidence
of that
from this administration.
He said this week, it's not just drain the swamp, we now need to drain the sewer. And to be honest with you, that, I think, is the thing that troubles me the most, because the sewer here is his reference to the media. And I'm sorry, the New York Times doesn't get it right all the time. And maybe they have bias. Of course, humans do. But if we relegate the mainstream media in this country to the sewer that can't be trusted, then we will all suffer the consequences of that.
It is a pattern and practice of autocratic societies to first and foremost destroy the public trust in the news media. As you say, certainly mainstream media have made many mistakes over the years, but they're the ones that issue those corrections and clarifications, and they fess up to the errors that they make. And, you know, frankly, I'm not seeing that with an outlet like Fox, or certainly not groups like Breitbart, InfoWars, and similar kinds of sites.
Jane Kirtley's on the phone line. Go ahead, finish that thought, Jane.
I was just going to say, to equate the two, and they all have First Amendment protections, but their mission is not the same.
That's Jane Kirtley, professor of media ethics at the University of Minnesota. Just one last text message from one of our listeners here. You are discussing this discussion about what happened with Fox and Friends in the New York Times. You are discussing what CNN does constantly, report rumors as if it is news. But if Fox does it, oh, my, stop being defensive. You know, when CNN gets caught doing it, and by get caught, I mean realizes that they've reported something that's not true, three people who have been journalists for their lives lose their jobs the next day. So where are the mass firings at Fox News when they continue to report things that aren't true? CNN is not perfect. By the way, and then they apologized to Scaramucci, and then Scaramucci said, I get it. We all make mistakes. Let's do the best we can. And then they still fired the people that made the mistake. So tell me when the opposite of that happens with the administration or Fox News, and then maybe I'll stop being defensive about the future of journalism in this country.
We are in a serious crisis when the President of the United States and his administration cannot accept the elemental principle that the media exists to provide accountability to the public. They are not here to serve the president. That is not how we define patriotism for the press.
Let's you and I talk about sunshine. It's a beautiful day in Chicago, Jane. I hope you're having a nice day in Minnesota.
It's a little overcast, but it's nice and comfortable today. It's supposed to be up in the 90s tomorrow.
I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about today. Jane, I appreciate your time and expertise. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
John, thank you.
You know, when we used to do segments like this, I would worry about, well, what do the people who like the president say? What do they think? How do they feel about a segment like this? And I don't worry about that so much anymore because it's just so one-sided. The president is so completely off the rails and has no interest in getting back on that I can't worry about that. We just have to tell you what's happening. Yeah, we have our opinions and commentary about it, but if you're keeping score, if we had to say, yeah, well, CNN does this or Hillary did that, not only is some of that not relevant, but it's not even fair. It's just a landslide of cuckoo-ness from Donald Trump. And so you can't get caught in the vortex of trying to even the conversation. It's just not an even fight. The president owns Cuckoo Town. And so here we go. By the way, John, Fox throws misinformation out there knowing full well the majority of their audience will make no effort whatsoever to research its veracity. And about the text I read a moment ago that said, well, what about CNN? That person has texted back and said, thank you for reading my text. I was not defending Trump. My concern is the lack of distinction between commentary and reporting of real news from CNN. And I do think that is a problem for them. Thank you for listening and texting back. Among the president's tweets of the last 18 hours, here's just a few things that he wanted you to know. Number one, as the phony Russian witch hunt continues, two groups are laughing at this excuse for a lost election taking hold, Democrats and Russians. The president is still living in mid-2016. Hillary is still crooked. Marco's hands are still small. And he still is winning or is going to win by a landslide. He's still obsessed with crooked Hillary in the last election. He texted today or tweeted, it's very sad that Republicans, even some that were carried over the line on my back, do very little to protect their president. He tweeted, it's hard to read the failing New York Times or Amazon Washington Post because every story opinion, even if it should be positive, is bad. He tweeted, thank you at Lou Dobbs for giving the first 6 months of the Trump administration an A+. By the way, if you don't know who Lou Dobbs is, he's a guy that played football in the 1950s and didn't wear a helmet. He tweeted this, drain the swamp should be changed to drain the sewer. It's actually much worse than anyone ever thought. And I thought, oh, that is so true, Mr. President. He tweeted this, so why aren't the committees and investigators and, of course, our beleaguered AG looking into crooked Hillary's crimes? And finally, sleazy Adam Schiff, the totally biased congressman looking into Russia, spends all of his time on television pushing the Dem loss excuse. That was in the last 18 hours of the sitting president of the United States, who has a lot to do. It's 2:30. It's time for the news. Afterwards, Todd Leidy's been a friend of this show for years, the Chicago Tribune reporter. He's on the investigative side now. And what happened with the water department in the city is really strange. Steve, I understand people who do stupid stuff, but I don't understand people who do stupid stuff knowing full well they're going to get caught. If you are tweeting or texting stupid stuff, you're going to get caught. And yet they were. In our studio, too, is Todd Leidy, a longtime Chicago Tribune investigative reporter. You and I haven't shared a studio in a while. How have you been, Todd?
I'm well, thanks, John.
Good to see you. You have been coming on my show for years and years, talking about the various investigations you've done. And now you're doing this one about the City of Chicago Water Department and an outrageous series of email that have been floating around. How did this story get started? What was the seed for all of this?
The seed was the inspector general began an investigation into city employee Paul Hansen's use of his city email. It started out with an investigation into Hansen negotiating the sale of firearms using his email.
His email. Was that illegal? Should he not have been doing that?
illegal is probably not the right word, but it is against city policy to be using your government email for things that are far more extensive than, say, you know, it's okay to check the Chicago Tribune for story updates, but it's another thing to be on there for hours or whatever to conduct, you know, commercial business.
So they're investigating this guy. Then what happens?
In the course of going through his emails, they stumble upon or come upon emails that they find to be racist, sexist, and anti-gay, and also anti-Muslim.
Who are those from?
Those emails have been passed around in the department among the white workers and the white bosses. We had reported today that email actually, a source of that email came from an address belonging to a state of Illinois employee by the name of Frank Capuzzi.
Who's Frank Capuzzi? I know the answer to this, but go ahead.
Frank is a longtime state of Illinois employee, almost four decades or so, and he's an investigator with the Workers' Compensation Commission.
And son of a former Republican state lawmaker, right?
That is correct. And Frank Capuzzi himself is a former GOP ward leader.
Okay, so he's a politically connected guy, but a Republican, right?
That is correct, a Republican.
I didn't know that the city of Chicago employed Republicans. Okay, so there he is doing that. He's the source of these, or were other people writing their own racist, homophobic things?
He is a source of those that end up in the water department. I don't think he actually put these emails together himself. They were forwarded to him by somebody else, and, you know, it's just sort of how the chain goes.
Well, do we have ground zero? Who's patient one on these, and is that part of the investigation?
That's a good question. I don't know who patient one
Maybe
is.
Maybe it doesn't matter, by the way. I mean, if you wrote it, shame on you. If I forwarded it, shame on me, right? I mean, I wonder if those are crimes of equal nature.
That's also a good question. The Workers' Compensation Commission says they've started an investigation into Mr. Capuzzi's emails.
So we don't know the actual source of these.
We don't. The original source?
Yeah.
No. The person who made these? No.
Sure. Said these awful things comparing, well, I don't want to give them any more light than is necessary, but just describe or talk about a couple of them.
Well, some of the more offensive ones was one titled Chicago Safari Tour,
yeah.
And in which the email makes jokes of or makes light of the shootings of children in predominantly black and Hispanic neighborhoods, where they show pictures of a black baby in a water bucket holding a slice of watermelon, basically saying that's the kid's swimming pool. It's those sorts of things.
That's enough. So those are out there. We don't know how those originated, but some members of the city water department are sharing these.
That is correct. They were sharing them.
What was the lag time between, like, were you able to see, okay, it posted, somebody got that email, say, with that, to the time that they were busted? How long were these floating out there?
So for years. The emails go back, I think, at least till 2012. And this all started to come to a head in May, and that's when the Water Department commissioner and his deputy resigned.
So for 4 or 5 years, the water department's been rife with these sorts of exchanges among some members of the staff, and nobody said or did anything?
That is correct. And that's one of that's what you hit on there. The water department, some people believe, is still one of those departments in the city that has this culture that they haven't overcome yet. Used to see it in the streets in sand, and some people would say the police department. Right, in the fire department. And
not
so,
all. By the way, let me just insert this, because I don't want to pile on anybody. What my point was, I'll let you express yours, was that there are cultures. They're not all racist, homophobic, et cetera, but there are cultures, and it's very difficult to break that. This is the culture you're describing with some people in the water department.
Correct, some people in the water department.
Yeah.
Not everybody in the water department.
Sure.
But when you have it in this situation where you have the commissioner and the deputy commissioner who are aware of these emails, or those emails come their way, and they don't respond to it, that sends a message to the rest of the people in the department.
Okay, so 5 people have lost their jobs over this?
So far.
Okay, I wonder how many people read it, though.
How many people shared
were
the
aware
emails?
Of them, yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Would you guess?
I couldn't.
Tens of people or hundreds of people?
Probably tens, but not hundreds.
Okay. So it's not like, I mean, because that would be that would be another level of scandal then, wouldn't it? If hundreds and hundreds of people and nobody said anything.
Correct.
And you don't think it's that high?
The Inspector General's investigation's ongoing. I think there'll be some more people who will get caught up in this.
And is that it, though? I mean, not to minimize anything, but that's the worst of it, that really callous, Email were being exchanged by a handful of people in the water department, and we're getting away with it. Did the mayor know about it? I wonder who else would have been a watchdog for this that could have called it out.
So that's a good question, too. We don't know what the mayor knew when he knew it. They're saying the city hall's position is, Manuel's position is, that once he found out about it, that being from the inspector general earlier this year, he acted swiftly.
How high up in the city water department or other city departments does this go?
So it's confined to the water department for now. And as we reported today, there was a state employee who was involved in the emails, but he wasn't using his own state government email. He used his personal AOL email.
To forward some of these racist emails?
To Paul Hansen in the water department.
Does that then sort of insulate them maybe from repercussions?
And that's a good question, because that was he accessing his personal email while in state time? Was he using a state computer to access? And all those are the sort of questions that need to be asked.
I wonder what the rights are of the city, say. If I saw you on your private time, on your private email, sending something awful to me as a private citizen, you and I are having this ugly chat, and then my employer finds out about it, and I'm working for the city, but I'm not an elected official. Should they or could they fire me as a result?
What the state would do, and in the state situation, I'm not as familiar with the city's end of it, where they're looking, the state has a code of ethics and conduct where, you know, if you do something that it's unbecoming of you as a state employee, you bring sort of disrepute onto the state and your job. That can fit in that. There's all these complicated issues over a collective bargaining agreements where the union may come into place, those sorts of things. So those are things that would need to be played out.
I could understand, because I think we've all witnessed it to some degree, somebody sending a forward or saying something, say on a text message or a private email, that is in poor taste. But this isn't a quip or a one-off. This seems endemic, and it seems creative. I mean, you know, images and things like that. It's not just somebody sent me an email and they shouldn't have said that. It seems to be much more ingrained and involved. You know what I mean?
Right. These are multiple emails shared among multiple people who have, some would argue, have sort of like maybe the same mindset, because nobody wrote back, hey, knock it off. Don't be sending me this crap.
Yeah. And how much time did it take to generate this if you're using Photoshopping or pulling art and mixing it in with the text? Was it always email? Was it texted? What was the medium of exchange?
It was almost always email that we've seen. There has been no text.
Yeah. You said all white people were exchanging these. I'm not shocked to hear that, I guess. What's the minority employment in the water department? And has there been any pushback or outcry from there?
So Emmanuel did replace Barrett Murphy. He's the old water commissioner, with Randy Connor, who's an African-American. He's now ordered the employees to undergo training. So some of that's starting to try to change it from the top.
I love the old sensitivity training. But what are you going to do? You know, I mean, if it's the police department and we've got to stop X, if it's the water department and we got to stop Z, what do you do but give them some training, I guess?
Right, you're saying, okay, why do you have to tell somebody in today's world that, hey, this is wrong?
That's it. So if somebody's homophobic and racist and anti-Islam and thinks that's funny, I don't know what the course is that's going to fix that, except maybe a pink slip. You know, I mean, you go be somebody else's problem.
And so far, there are five people who've been pink slipped or resigned. Or
do you think there will be more?
I believe there will be more.
Because more people witnessed it? I wonder, if I'm in that email chain, am I now going to lose my job?
That's a good question. And so where does it go? I mean, they started at the top, and so they sort of seem to be working their way down. The people at the top who should have known better should have been the ones who could have stopped this, right? So that remains to play out.
So you send your buddy an email. You go, hey, isn't that funny? And he doesn't think it's funny. I wonder what his first responsibility is, to say, hey, stop that, or to immediately report that. You know, maybe as a friend, you'd say, hey, dude, that thing you sent about the gays, that's not funny. Don't send those to me anymore, and don't send those to anybody else anymore. Maybe you do that once. Boy, the second time, maybe the first time, but certainly the second time, you've got to report them up the chain.
And it isn't like the Inspector General or the Chicago Tribune or other media aren't out there FOIAing people's emails. I mean, we FOIAed Rahm Emanuel's emails, and this whole lobbyist thing sort of snowballed out.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, that pales in comparison. And really, that's the thing I said to Steve Bertrand earlier, Todd Leidy, Chicago Tribune reporter. Maybe in 2012, but certainly in 2016-17, you got to know. If it's digital, and it is if it's on your phone, if you are texting it, if you are tweeting it, if you are emailing it, it exists digitally. It will be there after the last cockroach dies. It will be there forever. And eventually, Todd Leidy is going to find it, and you're going to suffer for it. How many times do I have to explain that to people?
I guess you got to keep explaining it to them.
All right, Todd, anything else to tell us about this story today?
I think I said, other than, as I said, the Inspector General's investigation is ongoing, and I don't think we've heard the end of it.
Headline in one story in the Tribune is, racist email scandal moves beyond Chicago as Illinois opens up investigation into state employees' role. Yeah, just a mention about that. You've been sort of segueing back and forth in your conversation about state and city. So it's not just the city of Chicago now.
It has now moved into another agency, another government body.
Okay, Todd. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Well, thank you, John.
Todd Leidy reports for the Chicago Tribune. John Williams here. Ro and Anna swing through the Allstate Showcase studios in about 8 minutes. Thanks again to Todd Leidy from the Chicago Tribune for coming by. Earlier, Steve Bertrand and I played handyman poker. We brag on Mondays about all of the clever, handy, difficult, and sometimes dangerous things we accomplish over the weekend. And then we see which you think was the handiest. Steve eked out a narrow victory today, beating me by a margin of about 6-1. I believe the final vote was 30-5 or something like that. First of all, we need more votes, and we need you to better assess the value of the handy projects that I do. But that's Monday's game. I'm not going to worry about this past weekend. But I did get a text from somebody who wanted to chime in. So Steve and I were bragging about relatively modest accomplishments, according to this texter. She said, hey, John, in the last couple weekends, my husband, and I knew we would get these kind of texts, Steve, because hard as it is to believe some people are handier than us. My husband replaced the water heater, the bamboo flooring that was damaged by the leaking water heater, and then he built a coffee table with a polished concrete top.
Well, that's impressive.
But not as impressive as what you did, eh, Stevie?
No, not at all. I mean, everyone has their own level of impression, I guess, but I just keep thinking of those hurricane force winds that were blowing somewhere in the world.
Yeah, nowhere near where you were.
While I was up on my roof.
No danger to you. I think maybe next week when we play handyman poker, we'll maybe take a guest listener or caller or texter, and it'll be you versus me versus one of our listeners. We'll find a way to incorporate
okay,
them.
But I have to say I did pour some latex paint in kitty litter to dry it last week, too.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's got to make you feel good. You know, now that's getting something done there,
no,
isn't it, Steve?
It's stupid.
I put together you just talk about assembling things. I also did this over the weekend. I assembled a dog stroller.
Oh, well, and you didn't pull that out?
It was, no tools were required, but you did have to get the wheel assembly right, and you had to get the handlebar correct. The reason I maybe didn't want to brag about it too much because
I just figured that out.
After you assemble a dog stroller.
Yeah, it's a dog stroller.
You have a dog stroller.
Right.
Nothing good about that.
No.
But then I took Bingo, our hunchback wiener dog, for a walk because he can't walk. He's got arthritis. He's 100 years old. He stays in the house. Therefore, I stay in the house. And if I want to go for a walk, I think, what a shame. The dog can't go for a walk.
Put him in a stroller.
I know. I don't want to be that guy. When I've seen those people before, I'd roll my eyes and go, oh, for God's sakes, a dog stroller, please. Just put the dog out of its misery. The dog's not miserable, he just can't walk.
Right. Well, who would be miserable? You're being pushed around a beautiful neighborhood in the city of Chicago?
With a pink blanket. So there
what?
I was.
What?
I know, but that's the blanket I grabbed. And now it dawned on me as we're halfway to wherever.
The dog needs a blanket?
Well, he's got to sit on something in there, and I thought he'd be cozy. So I'm walking over by Wrigley Field, and I'm going north on Sheffield. The game is, I don't know where the game was going on. The game was going on. They were playing the Cardinals.
You're not wearing anything that says WGN on it, are you?
I'm not going to answer that. So I'm walking north on Sheffield, and they've got these sort of open-air bars that come right up to the sidewalk. Light bulb! So I parked him on the sidewalk in the doggy stroller with the pink blanket, and then I just stepped just inside. I had the first seat on the door there. So I was able to have a beer and watch the Cubs and Cards while he was sitting in the doggy stroller. I thought that was going to be a good idea until people start walking up and down the sidewalk. And they come upon us and go, oh, look at this little doggy in its stroller. One woman came up to me and I said, this is so emasculating. And she was so sweet. She says, oh, no, it's okay. This is good. And then she looked at Bingo and said, your daddy loves you. Which didn't help me feel less emasculated.
No. Couldn't you have just stayed in and watched Sex and the City over and over?
Thank you for that, Steve. So that's why I didn't mention during Handyman Poker that I was able to snap together the G7, now with a mesh canopy, doggy stroller. All right, it's 2:56. Glad I was able to get that off my chest. Rowan, Anna, join you next here on WGN. I just turned your microphone on, Anna. As
I took a bite of cake.
There was this great calamitous noise outside the door just as I was finishing. I thought, what the hell's going on there? Then your team walks in and they tell me, it's her birthday.
It's her birthday.
Devonta's birthday.
It's Devonta's
birthday. I had cake for breakfast, cake for lunch, and this is my third helping of cake, and I'm just going to keep going with this.
You go, girl.
And because Anna's half Greek, we celebrate 7 days after her actual birthday. It's the whole thing. It's based on the...
You have a name's day,
the Orthodox,
and a birthday.
Yeah, the Orthodox Church.
Is today your actual birthday, or was it last week?
No, today's my actual birthday.
You can't stop eating that cake, can you?
It's my birthday. Okay, I'm allowed to, all right? I mean, this is the one day when you're allowed to eat cake all day.
You know what? I learned a few things over the last couple of years here, John. Just you know, get out of her way. If things like this are happening. Okay, all right, got it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Does look pretty good.
Good to go.
It's delicious.
Chocolate on chocolate. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to have a lot. Is there any left from the green room?
What's the? Yes,
there
is.
What are the company? What is the Rocon Anna Devlantis rules about sharing said birthday cakes?
It's up to you, Anna. It's yours.
Well, I would like one more piece of cake.
I don't want to move.
Probably in a couple hours, because every couple hours I'm having a piece of cake, but you could go ahead and have some cake. I like you, John, so go have a piece of cake.
Well, I like you, too. What are you guys doing today?
Let's see here. Oh, let me tell you that Ben Bradley from Bradley Place is going to be joining us. There's a story he's working on about Chicago detectives overwhelmed by the number of murders. Not enough detectives to handle the investigations.
Are you surprised to hear that?
No. Nope.
What was the deal with 90 people were drunk at a concert?
Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Yeah, like hospitalized
sick.
Drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, holy cow.
In Massachusetts, yeah.
I'm not surprised to see underage drinking and drunkenness, but something was going on.
Generally, you start to look at maybe, right, it might not have just been drunkenness, you know, if there was, you know. So, you know, we remember Woodstock. I don't, but I know that...
I've been to a Dave Matthews concert. I've seen people vomit on a lawn, but
yeah. No, 90 taken to the hospital.
Wow. Yeah.
Pretty serious.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's Molly, but we don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I'm going with...
It's a good guess.
Dana Perino, former White House spokesperson, is going to join us to That's all coming up in this hour. Talk about what's happening, the shift in the communications over the White House. But then the president just got up and he brought the victims of Obamacare up. The victims of Obamacare.
Is that a tweet or a press conference?
A press conference. He had them with him at a White House event and, talked about how these people have all been victimized by the ravages of Obamacare. Now, what's interesting is, I don't know, the Senate bill that he's talking about, these are people who either lost coverage, had changed doctors, you know, things like that, moved to Medicaid. The question on the plate here is, are these victims going to be helped by the new plan?
It's a good
that
question.
I think was a mistake that might have been made by the communications direction of the White House meeting where the Senate is actually going to be. Because they haven't looked at the Senate bill. And it sounds to me like there's not a whole lot of help for these people on that side of it either. So we'll...
Well, was this Scaramouche? Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango's idea?
I don't think so. You know, he hasn't started yet officially.
No.
He's out there, but we have a little bit of that. So I want to ask Dana Perino about a few things he said. I like when he outed the president, he goes, when he said this anonymous source.
Tapper. Yeah.
I get this anonymous source. Says it wasn't even the Russians. The Russians, we would have never known it. And then, who's your source? What if I said the president of the United States? Call me from Air Force One. The one thing I've found about some of the people, I think the president himself, but some of the people around him, I think are kind of interesting. They are. There's a lot of name dropping that goes on, you know?
And you hate to bury it if it's the president from Air Force One.
Right.
So you knew he wanted to crow about
that. Yeah, there's a lot.
He could not resist.
There is a lot of, I met with the president last night. You are the communications director for the White House.
Yes, of course
of course you did.